Hi, this is Paula Morrell, and welcome to the Tales from the South podcast.
I'm glad she left me when she did. I'll raise my glass and I'll start to sing. Thanks for the memories.
How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music by the Salty Dogs? Y'all like the Salty Dogs? From Little Rock, Arkansas, the Salty Dogs' feel-good country music has been hailed by critics and fans alike and has been featured on TLC's Trading Spaces as well as HBO's Rectify. They have CDs for sale after the show, and more can be heard at thesaltydogs.net. All right, well, welcome to Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, and to a very special edition of Tales from the South, a monthly series we call the Tin Roof Project, where well-known Southerners bring their own true stories to life. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, and tonight's show is sponsored by William F. Lehman Public Library, all right here in North Little Rock, Arkansas. And I'm your host, Paula Martin Morrell. On my right here, strumming his 1931 National Resonator, is blues guitarist Mark Simpson. Mark can be heard on blues legend John Weston's CDs, Blues at Daybreak, and Got to Deal with the Blues. Mark wrote our theme music and plays for us live each week. And how about our set back here behind me? Y'all like our set? Each week we feature an artist, and tonight our featured artist is Little Rock painter Doug Norton, and our feature piece is this one right over here entitled Simply Avocado, which is for sale. Our listeners can find out more about this piece and Doug at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern style storytelling? Originally from Blytheville, Arkansas, Kathy Webb has been the National Secretary for the National Organization for Women, an Arkansas State Representative, the first openly gay candidate elected to state office in Arkansas, and the first woman to chair the Arkansas House Budget Committee. Webb was also the founding president of Chicagoland affiliate of Susan G. Komen for the Cure, organized its first race, and is past president of Stonewall Democrats of Arkansas. She worked in the hospitality industry for 25 years, with 15 years as an owner, and was the first woman to receive a Domino's Pizza National Manager of the Year Award in the 6,500-unit chain. Additional awards include the Pioneer Award from the National Association of Women Business Owners, Elected Public Official of the Year from the Sierra Club, and the National Pacesetter Award from Will Wand. Kathy is currently the Executive Director of the Arkansas Hunger Relief Alliance, the statewide umbrella organization for Feeding America food banks, food pantries and agencies, and hunger activists, the lead partner for the Arkansas No Kid Hungry campaign, and the education and advocacy clearinghouse on hunger issues in Arkansas. She lives with Maggie, her rescue dog, and Carl and Dash, her Katrina cats. Tonight, Kathy takes us back to her sixth grade year and a day she'll never forget in A Mother's Gift. Ladies and gentlemen, Kathy Webb.
Other than John Kennedy's election and breaking the gender barrier when I became a fire marshal, the best thing that happened in the sixth grade was Christmas. That Christmas morning, when I ripped the shiny green paper off the box for my mom and dad, inside was a baseball suit. Not a softball suit, but a real, live, honest-to-goodness baseball suit. It was gray, like the visiting team always wears, and it had a thin double pinstripe around the neck to the bottom of the shirt. It had my name, Kathy, in big letters across the left side on the front. It was the best present a girl could get. As I pulled it out of that box and screamed with delight, I had no way of knowing that in just a few months, that suit would lead to a family showdown, and my mother standing up for me would be something for which I'd always be grateful. My sixth grade autobiography was very clear. When I grow up, I want to be a senator or a baseball player for the St. Louis Cardinals. It's very specific. Never mind that up to that point, Hattie Caraway had been one of the few women to serve in the Senate, and no woman had then, or has yet, played for the Cardinals. However, I was determined, and from the earliest days I can remember, I approached these two goals with a seriousness of purpose. I think I got both of those interests from my mother, who was born in Strawberry, Arkansas, and spent many years of her life in the equally small town of Egypt, Arkansas, located in Craighead County. My mother's grandfather, Grandpa Milligan, was known as Mr. Democrat in those parts, and often rode his horse from town to town to all the political picnics where he would introduce the political candidates. While other children might remember Snow White or Cinderella, I remember hearing about Grandpa Milligan and even being able to discuss the merits of why Governor Adlai Stevenson of Illinois should run for president a third time, even though he had run for president twice and lost. And while I'm sure I didn't read Advise and Consent in the first grade, I've remembered for decades that book as one of the first I ever read all 616 pages. As a good Democrat, I embraced the nomination of John Kennedy in 1960 over my favorite Stevenson. I was chosen to be Kennedy's campaign manager in my class, got to make a speech on his behalf, and when it came time for my class to produce the school newspaper, I was chosen to be co-editor. My counterpart wrote his editorial on the Arkansas Razorbacks, while I wrote with delight about our new president, JFK. While my political pursuits in the sixth grade were largely successful, I can't say the same for my pursuit of baseball or my other favorite sport at the time, basketball. In fact, the worst moment of the sixth grade occurred when my friend Linda Shuffield and I got into a brawl on the basketball court. While being hauled off to the principal's office was a new experience for me, I think it was more traumatic for my teacher, Mrs. Lyford. Mrs. Lyford was a new teacher at Williams Elementary and had only recently graduated from college. She actually cried as she hauled Linda and me to the office. Not because we didn't deserve some kind of punishment, but likely because she was a parishioner at First United Methodist Church, where my father was the associate pastor. I think she dreaded seeing him on Sunday looking at her from the pulpit. When I wasn't thinking about politics, I was playing baseball. My glove accompanied me everywhere, and I could name the starting lineup in most every team in the major leagues, especially the National League, where my beloved Cardinals played. Every spare penny went to buy baseball cards, which I treasured and traded with other aficionados of the game. While Ken Boyer, the third baseman for the Cards, was my favorite player, I usually pretended to be Don Drysdale, Bob Gibson, or Sandy Koufax, throwing a fastball or curveball past the batters and striking them out. Occasionally, my family would make the trip to visit both sets of grandparents. I delighted in telling my classmates, "I'm going to Egypt for the weekend," confident that they would envision me jetting off to an exotic country filled with pyramids and sand and home of the Nile. But instead, we made the nearly 3-hour drive on two-lane and dirt roads to get to Egypt, Arkansas. For a child not raised in the country, like my older siblings, there were both a few terrifying things about Egypt, as well as a few exotic things. I was terrified of the roosters and dreaded the chore of gathering eggs for fear of losing my life, and tried to block out of my mind that my Mamaw Webb's delicious fried chicken accounted for the shrinking number of chickens in the chicken house. The bathrooms were kind of scary for me, too, in both houses. They seemed to be add-ons located at the back of the house, and they were very cold. There was no heat back there. At Mamaw and Papaw Williams' house, there were some rickety stairs back by the bathroom, but they didn't lead to a basement. They led to a rather dark, damp, dirt cellar, which was lined with large glass jars filled with a semi-clear liquid. I was scared to go down there, but the source of all my knowledge, my older cousin Greg, told me that the jars were filled with moonshine and left there from the previous owners of the house. My favorite thing about Egypt was a trip to the Egypt Mercantile Company. What a grand name for a store in a town of 100 people. I remember the huge displays of Prince Albert in a can, but nothing could top the dozens of large glass jars filled with penny candy. Or as my cousin once said, and I'm sure got in trouble for, candy jars that reached from heaven to hell. My grandfather Williams, who was the proprietor of this wonderful store, would let us put our hands into the jars, gathering as much candy as our small hands could hold. I relished each piece of candy, as well as the many Dr. Peppers we consumed. Papaw Williams took the Dr. Pepper people quite literally and believed that we should do as the sign said, drink a bite to eat Dr. Pepper at 10, 2, and 4. Occasionally, my parents might wonder why I wasn't hungry for dinner, but I'm pretty sure they knew what was going on. My second favorite thing about the Egypt Mercantile Company was that my other grandfather, Papaw Webb, was the Egypt postmaster of the tiny post office tucked into a corner of the store. I could spend hours eating my candy and drinking my Dr. Peppers and flipping through the photos of the FBI's most wanted criminals. I memorized those faces, and I'm pretty sure I would have been ready to apprehend any of the criminals who dared show themselves in Egypt. And while I rarely ran out of criminals to study, countless hours were spent studying the Sears and Roebuck catalog. I studied the saddles in the catalog, and although my brother and sister had lived in Egypt with my parents and had a pony named Tony, I didn't have a horse. I didn't know how to ride a horse, but I was mesmerized by the thought of owning one of those marvelous leather saddles. My cousin Greg thought the biggest day in Egypt was the day our family's cows were marched through town on their way from their summer and fall pasture to their winter pasture. But my mother knew that nothing would top Mamaw and Papaw Williams' upcoming 50th wedding anniversary, a first on her side of the family. Mamaw Williams' mother died when she was a young girl, and her father did the best he could to bring up six girls. My grandmother Aggie certainly had a mind of her own and wasn't afraid of anyone or anything, although I remember kind of being afraid of her. The year before I got my baseball suit, Mamaw Williams had given me what was, up to that time, the best Christmas present ever. A beautiful black lacquer box with an exquisite bird on top. As my cousins and I were oohing and aahing over the gift, an older cousin took the box and in a know-it-all manner explained that the small rectangular opening in the box was where you put an unwrapped package of cigarettes. The bird would gracefully tilt over and retrieve one cigarette at a time in its beak. I'm sure my grandmother didn't know what the box was for, and I didn't get to keep the box, but I digress. Preparations were made for Mama and Papa's 50th wedding anniversary, and new outfits, which were few and far between for our cousins and us, were purchased. The big day finally arrived, and as my family was loading into our car for the trip to Egypt, I bounded down the porch steps in my best outfit, my prized baseball suit, complete with my baseball tube socks, substituting my black and white saddle Oxfords for my cleats. My brother and sister, who sported starched shirts and itchy sweaters, instantly started grumbling about my attire. My dad, like he often did, stayed out of it. But my wonderful mother, who grew up during the Depression and always looked nice no matter how little money she had, said, "Now y'all leave Kathy alone. If that's what she wants to wear, then that's all right by me." My brother glared at me behind my mother's back, but nothing else was said. Mother gently smoothed her skirt with her hands as I slid into the back of our 1957 Buick Roadmaster and shut the door. Dad closed Mother's door, sat down in the driver's seat, and started the engine. And as we pulled out of the driveway and onto the highway, I silently thanked my mother for what turned out to be a lifetime of her letting me be me. Thank you.
So thank you so much, Kathy Webb, for being on our Tin Roof Project here at Tales from the South. I love the details of your love of basketball in the sixth grade, the genuine baseball suit, trading baseball cards with the other aficionados of the game, and pretending to be Don Drysdale. Did you ever get to go to a Cardinals game?
Yes. And in fact, oftentimes in the summer, my parents would take me to St. Louis, and we would go to baseball games. And as an adult, I've continued to go to St. Louis and see the Cardinals play. And when I was in the fifth grade, we lived in Oak Park, or Oak Forest, and our next-door neighbor was a player for the Travelers, and so I went to a lot of Travelers baseball games as well.
Oh, neat. And so when you went to the Cardinals game, did you wear your baseball suit at this time?
I didn't wear my suit, but I always took my glove with the hopes that I would catch a ball, which I never did.
Never did. Okay. And do you have any other memorabilia from either the Cardinals or for the Travs?
I still have a few baseball cards. I wish I had all the baseball cards. And my nephew has my baseball glove.
The Egypt Mercantile Company sounds like a magical place to be. Having grown up in a small town myself with a corner store, I find the scene of you drinking Dr. Pepper and looking through the FBI Most Wanted folder very familiar. Is the Egypt Mercantile still open?
Sadly, it is no longer open. Interestingly, though, before I was born, when my brother and sister lived in Egypt with my parents, at one point my dad was the proprietor of the grocery store, and then my grandparents owned the store. And we went to Egypt for the first time in many, many years. About 3 or 4 years ago, we drove through Egypt, and the stores closed. And it's another one of those small towns in Arkansas that unfortunately doesn't have a lot of people and doesn't really have much commerce.
And so the building is still there?
Nope.
No,
the
building's gone too.
But there's nothing where the building where it used to be.
This story encapsulates 1 year of your life, the sixth grade. The details are so vivid and clear. Y'all find them so vivid, right? Have you ever written about this time of your life before?
No, this was the first time.
This is the first time, okay. What about other times of your life, other periods of your life besides the sixth grade? Have you written about your life?
No, but I will tell you, Paula, you know, you mentioned that I had served in the House and as the first openly gay elected official. I bought a journal, and when I started in the House, people said that you should really write down, you know, that your feelings and your thoughts and things that happened to you, both good and bad. Mm-hmm. And so I periodically have done that. And, you know, I really want to sit down and do more of that because I don't want to forget all of those things, because there were really many wonderful things that happened and there were some not so good things that happened. And I do think it's important to preserve that because for Arkansas, it was a first.
Oh, sure. And I think, you know, for me personally, but I think that our audience would perhaps agree with that, with this, perhaps an autobiography might be in order. What do y'all think? I think it'd be wonderful. And not only do you have these wonderful memories from your past, but also, like you said, the historical context of what you've done as an adult. So, all right, well, we have a few minutes here at the end for audience questions.
Your story was excellent, and when you started, I thought it was going to be about a battle to play on boys' teams. And I'm curious, did you ever play on boys' organized league sports? And if so, how long until what age?
No, I did not, but that's a very good question, and it brings up a different point. You know, I mentioned that I was a fire marshal in the sixth grade, and I almost wrote a story about that, because when we went to the sixth grade, they said you can have your choice between being a fire marshal or safety patrol, or you can dust erasers, or you can work in the library. And I said I wanted to be a safety patrol officer, because who wouldn't, like a baseball suit, you know, who wouldn't want to wear a badge and a little uniform kind of thing? And they said, well, girls can't be safety patrol officers. And I did not like that answer, and so I went to Ms. Lyford. I think having my dad as the preacher was very beneficial, because Ms. Lyford was usually rather agreeable to things. And so I protested, and Ms. Lyford and I did make one other trip to the principal's office, and we had this discussion about why girls couldn't do certain things, and they ended up letting me be a fire marshal, which was also the first time that a girl was ever a fire marshal. So that was my first political experience in organizing and working to create change.
You have been very politically active and successfully over the years, and you have been part of some of the success of the ERA legislation, even though it didn't pass in our state, and you've also been very active in the marriage equality and that sort of thing. And I was just curious, in your political experience, could you talk about some of the things that you're most proud of that you helped to succeed and some of the things you were disappointed that didn't work?
When I was in the legislature, some of the things that I was most proud of were some environmental bills that we were able to get passed, that I sponsored, particularly a bill creating a plan for all buildings that the state of Arkansas owns to become politically more energy efficient. And I was also proud of some work I did creating a fund for cities to get more revenue from highway taxes or from sales tax. It was a huge disappointment that the ERA was not brought up for a vote when I served in the legislature, because ironically, in 1982, I had organized the last rally for the ERA in Arkansas on the steps of the Capitol. So here I was, almost 30 years later, almost being able to vote on that, and it failed in the committee because of a Democratic woman who voted against letting it out of committee. And while that was very difficult, and I was very upset, you know, I knew that as an activist I could be very angry, but as a legislator, you know, I would need that woman's vote on something else tomorrow. You know, and so as it turned out, that woman and I worked very hard on passing an animal cruelty bill, something else that I was also very proud to be the first co-sponsor of. In my third term, I didn't have as much legislation because, as Paula said, I was the first House chair of budget and the first female co-chair of joint budget in Arkansas history, and I really focus most of my attention on budget issues. But I have been very outspoken on marriage equality, and when I was in the legislature, I was very proud that every anti-gay bill that came up was defeated, and I was also proud that in my third term, We did something very proactive, and we passed an anti-bullying bill that included sexual orientation and gender identity, and Arkansas became only the 11th state in the country to have an anti-bullying bill that included sexual orientation and gender identity. And even though you didn't ask, I hope my political career is not over.
I think we all hope that very, very much, too. I think I speak for everybody. I wonder if you have spoken about your recollections of that day with your brother and sister, and if they recollect the events the same way.
Since my sister's here, I'll make sure she doesn't have a chance to answer that question. We've talked about it a little bit. There is the family picture of that day. There are 20 people in the family picture, all my cousins, my aunts and uncles. You know, everybody had on really nice outfits and dresses, and I'm in the front row with all my other, all the little cousins, and they all have real nice outfits, and I'm there with my baseball suit. So the proof is there. We've got the pictures. And right before we started, I showed my sister the picture of me that hung in our house for many years, of me in the baseball suit with the hat and with the bat, you know, in that classic pose. And so she knew it was going to be a little bit about the baseball suit. But I will stand by my story as being factual.
Kathy, could you give us a health update?
Yes, thank you. I finished chemotherapy in December. I think a lot of people know that last year I was diagnosed with breast cancer, stage 2 breast cancer, and had a couple of surgeries and then started chemo, finished in December. And while this is actually one of my first public outings in a long time, I'm feeling a lot better, trying to be real careful right now about being around too many people because there is so much illness. And in a few days, I'm going to start taking Remedex, and I'll take that daily for the next 5 years. But the long-term prognosis is very good. So thanks for asking.
So how about our story and storyteller tonight? Thank you so much, Kathy Webb, for being on our Tin Roof Project here at Tales from the South. Thank you to our live audience, and thank you to UALR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, and our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle publication at aymag.com. Tonight's show is sponsored by William F. Lehman Public Library, with additional support provided by the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, the Writers Colony at Derry Hollow, and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, YouTube, and Stitcher Smart Radio, and you can download and listen to our podcast on our website. More can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week at Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
A house built on love and hard work and they never seem to care about the fortunes of the land. He worked at the paper mill, and she slaved at home with the kids. A dinner table they would share. He'd say grace, they'd bow their head. And the people cried, and the people cried. Everybody said she wasn't hard to please. Wanted shoes for their feet and jeans to cover their knees. She only wanted the bare necessities.
late one night. Her request, he left home on the bicycle. Speeding car, did not see as he took his last breath. And the people gathered round, and they stood there out in the cold, with a beating hand. The call was made, and all she said was no, no. And the people cried, and the people cried. Everybody said she wasn't hard to please. She wanted shoes for their feet, jeans to cover their knees. She only wanted the bare necessities. As she stared at the cocoa clay, she remembered the bed they'd made. Beating heart, arm in arm, she stood there so strong and so brave. And then she cried, and then she cried. She said that I was never hard to please. I only wanted shoes for their feet. Then she fell down to her knees. She only wanted the bare necessities. Lord, she only wanted the bare necessities. A house built on love and hard work.
Writer accommodations provided by Robin Wood Bed and Breakfast. More at robinwoodbnb.com. Experience Tales in Person as a member of our live audience. Schedule and ticket information can be found at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Thanks for helping keep the art of Southern style storytelling alive. And we'll see you next week, either on this station or at Starving Artist Cafe, for another edition of Tales from the South.